Okay. So how did that go? Good. So learnings, discoveries, questions about listing similarities, contrastive analysis, mapping across, the whole thing. Yes, Chris.
When we were going to the dislike,
yeah.
Her feet ran onto the balls
of
the feet.
Oh, right.
And one leg was shaking.
Oh, right.
And then when we went onto the like,
yeah.
Went onto her ears.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the interesting thing for me then at that point in time, because what you've done is you've calibrated different physiology for each of those particular sets of submodalities. Did you notice that? So then when you took it, were you going like to dislike? Okay. So when you took the thing that she disliked, she'd gone to the ball of her feet again, presumably.
Sorry.
Yeah. And then when you mapped them across to the submodalities of like, with the thing that she used to dislike, did she then go onto her heels? Brilliant. That's calibration for you. Yeah, so then you know it's really changed because you're getting like a, not only are you getting the test, you know, when you're going like, okay, so do you, now this thing that you used to dislike, do you like it? And she goes like, yeah, I like it. But also, not only are you getting the test with the words, but you also know totally, from totally out of her consciousness, that you've got the result because you've seen the physiological shift as well. And that's the ultimate test, really. Because what you want, that's congruence. So whenever anybody says something, what you want to look for is like, is there congruence between the physiology and the words? Brilliant. Excellent stuff. Sorry? Yeah.
Very pale.
Very pale.
We were working with Cecilia, who wanted to go off coffee.
Right.
We brought her a cup of coffee, and she was really grossed out. And poor Phil went to drink it, and she wouldn't let him drink it. I mean, it was really very strong. No, you can't. No. And really, totally.
She's gone back into this day again now, I think.
She wouldn't even, so it wasn't even just a change for herself. She wouldn't let others drink it.
Right.
So don't
give me a
coffee.
Yes, can you give me a coffee? No, absolutely not. Yes.
In the process of going off the crisps, I managed to give up eggs as well.
Ah.
It was just to do with the shape of what was caught in my throat.
Oh, right, okay. And was that okay for you to, like, go off eggs as well?
I just destroyed breakfast.
However, they're a different shape of the fried breakfast.
It didn't matter once the egg, the whole thing, the whole frame of eggs came in. And,
oh, right. Obviously, your unconscious mind was wanting you to stop eating eggs for some reason.
Every visit to a delicatessen counter now has got to be an experience.
He got worse, though, because as I was giving up the onions, my dislike food was tripe, which Tony also. Like,
oh,
he was eliciting that he was getting into it himself.
I must admit. That's my dislike. Yeah. That's the one that I use. That's always the one I use. Because I remember being, when I was a kid, seeing it like laid out in the butcher's shop window, you know, all the little tentacles on it still. Yeah. My grandma used to like that, you know, tripe and onions.
That's what your parents should have put the wardrobe both
of. What, tripe? Yeah, I'd have never gone in there again. But I would have thought it was clothes, you see, though, wouldn't I? Because it wouldn't make a noise when I shook it. You would do, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Just gone and mixed the two of them.
Tripe and eggs. With a crisps on the side. Yes. Yeah. Because what you're kind of like you're not in the hot seat either, because there's actually two hot seats really. There's when you're the client, obviously you're completely engrossed in being a client. When you're the practitioner, you're going like, God, what do I have to do next? You know. So when you're in the observer, you can kind of like relax and you can see the interplay between the two people, which one gets puts you in a great position for giving the practitioner some feedback, but also it's a great learning position as well. Yeah, yeah. That's why we do as many exercises as we can. The ones that are most appropriate we do in doing groups of three. So it's a good learning position.
I was contrasting chips that are like liver and liver. And one of the things
right.
about liver that I don't like is the sliminess.
Oh, right.
So when we were going through the submodalities of the chips, the instruction was to put the chip in my mouth and feel the sliminess.
Right.
I sort of went, and I couldn't get over that the chips aren't slimy.
Right. Okay.
And then one of the instructors sort of came over and said, well, what if the chip was covered in liver slime? And then I thought, well, that'd be pretty gross. Is that just going to put me off chips that are really greasy and slimy?
With liver slime.
Yeah. Chips which aren't.
So that's one of the things. That's a very, very good point. So what you've actually got is, and this is something to be careful of, because this is one of the reasons why, in general, I don't tend to work with smells and tastes with this, because you can't actually change the smell and taste of something. Yeah. So you know, you've got the food here, and the thing that actually causes you to either like or dislike that food isn't the food itself. It's the internal representation it creates inside of you, yeah, rather than actually being this. So if you're changing the, you know, the V, the A, and the K here, then what you're doing is you're changing this internal representation here, rather than it going to like, yeah, that I like it, it changes to like I dislike this. Okay? Which means that the chips can stay exactly as they are right now on the outside. But the internal representation on the inside means you don't like them. Whereas if you attempt to change the submodalities of the actual food itself to like make the chips slimy, well, they're not slimy if you go to the right chip shop. Yeah. So it's not actually working with this, it's working with this. Does that make sense? Yeah, because and also it's kind of like, you know, working with the smell. You know, somebody go like, well, you know, let's change the smell of the coffee as an example. But like, so then what happens is, you test it. The person goes, okay, think of coffee. Ugh, you know, and then they go like, oh, let me have a sniff of the coffee and see what it smells like now. And it still smells like it used to. So then they go like, oh, it hasn't changed, because it hasn't. The smell of the coffee hasn't changed. What we're actually wanting to do is change what the smell of the coffee is linked to on the inside. Yep. So now this coffee smells the same, but now you dislike the smell rather than liking the smell. Yeah? So then the chips can stay exactly as they are, which they would do anyway. But what it's linked up to inside is the same submodalities as liver. So going purely with the kinesthetics inside, you know, if you, let's say that the feeling was slimy inside. You know, if like, oh, I've got a feeling here, let's say, and you go like, it's slimy for liver, then you give the, you, what you do is you change the submodalities of the chips to give you a slimy feeling inside, rather than actually working with the actual physical submodalities of the food itself, because they're not going to change. So we're not changing this, we're changing this. So that's why you couldn't get your mind around it, because you go like, well, chips aren't slimy. Yeah? And if you go like, well, cover them in liver slime, well, yeah, you wouldn't like those, but then you wouldn't have done before. So, you know, nothing's really changed as far as that's concerned. So it's purely with the internal representation rather than the external thing.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good distinction. Yeah.
Just a comment on the check, little tell.
Yeah.
It could be a lot of confusing. When you go through on the visual, you start off saying you make a picture, then you list all the modalities, some of that.
Let me just catch you on that for a second. So the wording is, when you think of the food you like, do you have a picture? Not, can you make a picture? Because if you say, can you make a picture, they could go inside and make up a picture, which isn't actually the one that they have linked with the food. So it's like, do you have a picture? Rather than, can you make a picture? Yeah? So what you're doing is you're going for visual remembered rather than visual construct. And some people take the can you make a picture as a visual construct. So that's another kind of like key distinction for success. Yeah? But carry on with your question.
As you go down, let's say they have more than one picture.
Yes.
It seems like you don't actually get to ask that question until the very end. So
yeah.
Say, do you have a picture? It's going to ask all of these stuff about that picture.
Yep.
You see from throws at the end, let's say.
So if they go like, I've got three pictures, you go like, okay, great, that's three pictures. You don't then elicit the submodalities of the other two.
Right.
what you've been doing is eliciting the subanalysis of the whole thing. Then you say, how many pictures are there? You're like, there's just one. Or you're like, there's three. You're like, okay, so you just like three. You then don't loop back to go and...
Would it make sense to ask how many pictures are there at the very beginning? Because if they've got three pictures, you're asking about the picture.
What they'll give you is the subanalysis of all of them.
The whole thing. The other thing that also something through us is, initially, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down, it says location.
Yeah.
And immediately when you set location, maybe it's because we're on the class, people are saying, oh, it's a 45-degree down there. And then further down the same list, you come back and say, well, what angle is it?
Right. So they're different, though. Okay. So your picture can be located here, but the angle it's viewed from, as far as the picture is concerned, is straight on. Yeah? If I've got a picture. Yeah, well. So if that was a picture, let's say there's a face on that piece of paper, yeah, and you're looking straight on at that particular piece of paper, yeah. So the actual picture is viewed straight on. The angle viewed from is like straight on. Okay. If I moved the location of that picture to down here, the angle that the picture is viewed from is actually still straight on, but it's located down here. Yeah. If we took somebody's photograph, moved it to here, the photograph would still be taken from the same angle, but it would be in a different location. That's what it actually means.
Okay, I got confused. It says, what angle is the picture from? Right?
Yeah.
What angle are you seeing?
What angle is the actual picture viewed from? Yeah. Because you notice with Curran, when we did the picture of the offal, was up here, but it was angled looking at it 45. Well, it actually was over there, but the actual angle of looking at it was 45 degrees. Yeah, in the picture itself. So that's the distinction between those particular two. There's another question over here. Oh yeah, sorry.
One thing that I found
very
powerful was if you can get them to actually describe the feeling in words. So please, bubbly, fatty, something.
With the feelings. Yeah. So when you get the, so what I do as far as like when I'm doing the kinesthetics particularly, I ask them the questions like what's the location, what's the size, what's the shape, and is there any vibration, all those kind of things. But I'll write down everything that they say there. So as far as the shape, they might go like, well, it's bubbling and it's kind of like horrible and fatty and whatever. So I'll actually write all those things down. And then, so when I say then change the feelings of what you, the like to the dislike, I will give them that like list, wish list, if you like, of those things. Yeah, definitely. Chris.
So if you say, do you have a picture?
Yes.
And I say no.
Yes. Could you have a picture?
Could you have a picture?
Yeah. Yeah. And if they still say no, what I would do at that particular point in time is that's where you would need to do a overlapping representational systems. Because probably what it is the visual is their least preferred. So if you remember overlapping from the tapes, it's the one where you take somebody to a beach, imagine in their mind going to their favorite beach, then you go to their preferred representational system and get them to describe the beach in their preferred representational system. Then to move into their next preferred, describe it that way. Then their next preferred, describe it that way. And then if visuals their least preferred, then when they've gone through all of those, what you've done is you've done a pace and a lead through their preferred representational system. What they can then do is they can start to describe what it looks like. Once you've got them into the kind of like visual operating mode, then you say, okay, so now as you think about the food that you like, do you have a picture? And they'll be able to get it. That's what the overlapping representational system is for in that situation.
Does that mean then that you have I guess with Sandra, she visualized straight away what she liked.
Right.
But she couldn't visualize anything when it came to dislike. And I took her through to the other ones.
Okay.
And then I came back and she did create a picture.
So what you probably did do is hopefully she didn't create a picture for you. Hopefully she got a picture for you. What you actually did from doing that was actually you did an overlap. Yeah. That's what you did.
Why doesn't she have like a picture?
But she did. But she just wasn't conscious of it. maybe because visual wasn't her preferred system.
So it can be a different, you have a different preferred system. Yep.
It is preferred system across the board.
Oh, right, I thought you just had one and that it's applied to everything.
Yeah, I would say that preferred representational system in general is kind of like the preferred that you have across the board.
Right.
Yeah. So for the thing that she liked, she was consciously aware of the picture. Mm-hmm. The thing that she disliked, she wasn't consciously aware of the picture. But then from actually going to the other representational systems and leading her through it, then she could actually become aware of the picture that she had. Yeah.
Is there also a bit that, what you like, you've probably got a picture of because you're probably into it, like biscuits, and what you don't like.
You might not want to look at it.
But you don't want to look at it. Yeah. So
the picture's still there, but it's kind of like, you know, why would I want to look at something I don't like? Because as soon as I see the picture, I feel better. Yeah. Yeah, so it could be that.
Yes. How important is it to, say, test this thing?
Very.
No, I mean, is there a... Like you did straight after the current. And if it's going to be like a few days or a few weeks before you're going to be in contact with the offending article, will it warm up anyway?
Should do. If the person was congruent about making the change.
Yeah, you don't need to have some immediate active physical test of
them. I mean, if at all possible. If at all possible, I do like to test it with the actual thing. Because it's more convincing for the client. And one of the other things, I mean, obviously there's a congruence for the client making the change in the first place. The other is that when they leave you, they're totally convinced they're changed. Yeah. It's not kind of like, well, you know, when I thought about it in the office, I didn't really like it, but I'll have to see what it's like next time I actually come, you know, I actually am with it. It has to do with their convincer, yeah. So I keep testing it until the person is totally convinced. And where, you know, and if I can't get the particular food, if just because it's kind of like not realistic, then, you know, I'll keep testing that, having them think about this thing that they used to like until they're kind of like really pleading with me to stop talking about it. And I'll say, like, you know, when you first came in, this was something you liked. And they go like, I know. I said, well, so, I mean, now you're pleading with me not even to talk about it, which is a great, the thing that I find, and it's something I like to set up, and I think it's in all of the work that I do on a one-to-one basis, is I like big contrast before and after. And you know, you see it all the time in the kind of like diet ads and all that kind of stuff. What do they show you? They show before and after pictures. Why? Because the before and after pictures are very convincing. You see a person before they went on the diet, you see the picture of the person after they went on the diet, and you're like, wow, doesn't even look like the same person. So that's why it's so convincing. So what I like to do with any of these change techniques is set up a before and after. So I'll have them kind of like tell me exactly, you know, how much they like this particular food, and I'll have them talk to me about it, you know, and they'll get excited and be like, you know, their mouth will be salivating, you know. Then afterwards, I get them to talk to me about it, and they're almost like retching up in the waste paper basket. That's a nice big contrastive before and after, which convinces them that something's changed. And if at all possible, I'll get the food that they're, you know, that they want to dislike, so I can actually and go like, oh, I've got some for you. And normally what you see is they actually pull, then they pull away physically. It's kind of like, no, keep it away from me.
Yeah, do you ever experience the problem with that you mentioned when you cure a phobia? They say, oh, I don't think I really had a problem with it.
Yes.
It's almost like proving you've earned your money in a way, isn't it?
So what you do is you have them have the problem in the office. So I'd always do that. Yeah? So... general one. We'll cover this more as we go along, but since you've raised it, it's a good point. And this is also part of the convincer thing. The general thing that I do is when they first come in, I get them to do it now. So if they have a phobia, I'll say, okay, so do it now. If they go like, I can't do it now, I'll say, well, I thought you were good at this. I thought this was a problem. Oh, you've got me here under false pretenses. You're like, no, I've got a real problem. I go like, well, do it now then. Because I want them to experience having the problem in the office.
Right.
Yeah. Then I do my intervention. Or interventions, depending. Yeah. And then I do it now. Can you do it now? And they can't. Because as you say, if they weren't having you picked the example of phobia, so I'll use that. If they didn't have the experience of doing the phobia in the office, and then you do the process, and they can't do the phobia in the office after you've done the intervention, how do they know anything's changed?
They change their internal reputation so much they almost believe that they didn't have it before.
Sometimes you can get that. Sometimes you can get that. They're like, actually, you know, I don't think that was a real problem anyway, really. Which case I go like, so why did you come and see me then? Oh, right, okay. but one of the ways around that for many people is to actually have them have the problem right in front of you. And so they have an experience of having it. So if it's a phobia, then, you know, I'll get them to put themselves in the position where they'd have the phobia response so that they have it. And you can do that. You see, if somebody can't do that, they don't have a real phobia. They might have an intense fear, but it's not a phobia. You know, when I do phobia demonstrations, you know, and I did one with somebody who had a phobia of bees and wasps. I said, bees and as soon as I said bees and wasps, they're kind of like, you know, they immediately go into it. Just the word hasn't go into it. That's a real phobia. Whereas you go like bees and wasps, they go, yeah, I don't like being in a room with them. That's not a phobia. That's I don't like being in a room with them. Phobia is like, so you ever think about bees and wasps? They go, as soon as you say the word, you know. Or you go like, so you have a problem with injections? And as soon as you say it, you know. As soon as you say the word needle, they cringe. That's how you know it's a genuine phobia. And then what you do is you can know how to fire it off. So you fire it off several times, yeah? Then you do the intervention, and then you fire it off, and it doesn't happen. Yeah. So that's what fills the convincer form. And it's the same with this. Same with this. You get them to tell you, to convince you how much they like this thing. As far as like, you know, they go like, well, I really like crisps. Well, how is that a problem? Well, because I eat them by the sack load, you know? And then you do the intervention, and then they have the experience of like not even being able to come close to them. It's a great convincer that something's changed.
There's a question on checking for congruency. I think growing up, we struggled. And I don't know, when I picked something that I really didn't like, but which was cruise, I remember having the same experience as you with Brussels sprouts and tart and all over the table.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't get that, although I knew I hated them, I couldn't get that state back. Do you elicit a state?
You couldn't get a state back of?
Of that real, when I tasted it, and I remember Bartholomew, and I remember that horrible feeling, and I know I don't like
prunes,
I won't look at them.
Yeah.
But I was still dissociated from it. And that even when I described it,
were you doing dislike to like? Or were you going like you want us to like prunes?
I didn't want to like wine.
Oh, okay. Some people over here are going like, what the? What's up with her? okay. There's a couple of things that could be around that. One is that like you'd done a drink with the food. So it might have been better to go for a drink with a drink. And then it also might have been because you weren't totally congruent about changing it.
No.
Okay. Ah, okay. But there's two different things there then. So when we get back from lunch, because we need to take lunch,
okay.
What I'll do, because the whole issue of congruence comes up with every process, so it's worthwhile talking about that as far as like how you detect congruence, and if you haven't got congruence, how you get it.